You're listening to UK Health Radio. I'm Dr. Dean Mitchell, and this is The Smartest Doctor in the Room, where real medicine meets real answers. Each episode, I bring you honest conversations with some of the brightest minds in health and medicine. Let's get started. Toxic mold exposure in the home is dangerous to your health. I see patients every week in my practice who are suffering from the effects of toxic mold. And in many cases, they were living in a home where they didn't even know mold was present. That's why I recommend to patients who suspect they are ill, possibly from toxic mold exposure, to obtain a test from Immunolytics, a company that specializes in mold detection with simple mold plates for your home or office. The mold plates are put in various rooms of your home and then left open for an hour. They are then closed up and you observe them for 5 days. If the mold plates show growth, you can send them back to Immunolytics and the company will analyze them and interpret the results for you. Please see the link in the show notes to order your mold plates from Immunolytics and use the code SMARTESTDOC to get a 5% discount. Today, I'm going to be interviewing one of the top Lyme specialists in the country, Dr. Richard Horowitz. Without any further ado, I'm really excited to welcome Dr. Richard Horowitz to the podcast.
Thanks. Pleasure to be here.
Okay. So, you know, Dr. Horowitz, I usually like to start out with, and I'm interested in your case too, you know, people's background. You know, in medicine, it's so diverse. You always wonder, why did somebody go into a specific area? How did you get involved treating chronic Lyme disease? And, you know, I just noticed like where you practice, that probably was a fairly heavy area where those cases were appearing. So is that what drew you into it? Or, you know, tell me how you got involved in this.
No, it was exactly that. I had trained at Mount Sinai. Same time, by the way, I did it between 1984 and 1987, HIV epidemic. One of my Mount Sinai preceptors was infectious disease. And the other one was Dr. Dave from Gastro. So I actually had a fair amount of internal medicine and infectious disease training. And, you know, of course, the Mount Sinai professors were just wonderful. But clearly what made the difference, and I joke about this, is the third year of residency, someone from Stony Brook came, was sitting in an audience getting a lecture about Lyme disease, this new disease that was taking place. And I remember distinctly turning to my friend Howie Prusak and saying, oh, yeah, sure, we're going to see a lot of that in our lifetimes. And it's, you know, clearly, obviously, I moved to Dutchess County, New York, 2 hours north. And that was the epicenter, by the way, at the time of like the highest Lyme epidemic in the United States. So, yes, as you asked the question, the reason I mostly did Lyme disease is I moved into such a highly endemic area. People were sick and, you know, maybe 75% got better with short-term antibiotics, but the 25% that didn't, those were the ones that I needed to put on my medical detective hat and figure out why these patients weren't getting better. And like internists, you know, we're taught to send them to rheumatologists and neurologists and infectious disease. I mean, nobody had any answers. So I started going to the Lyme conferences. I started looking at the medical literature. And little by little, I, you know, grew a database of figuring out how to do this. And of course, I've stood on giants who came before me, like Joseph Boriscano and Ken Liebner, Dr. Sam Donta. You know, the LDF conferences at the time in New York City were really key to educate us. But the answer is yes. I moved into the largest Lyme endemic area. And I just couldn't abandon patients and say, oh, I'm sorry, nobody has answers for you.
So well, that's a really good story and makes sense. Okay, now let's get into some more of the nitty gritty. And I can honestly, I have like really questions that I've thought about a lot. And I know we've done a mutual podcast. We did a mutual consultation together. And I just love the way you think and your approach. So I'm going to hit you with some of the things I've been thinking about, which I'm not sure always gets brought out. You know, when we found out that Lyme disease was due to a tick transmitting the bacteria Borrelia burgdorferi, a spirochete. And for our listeners, a spirochete is a special kind of bacteria in that it has sort of like this coiled configuration, you know, versus other bacteria, which could be round and they have the cell wall. They're a little bit like easier targets. But I guess what always confused me is that we know that the other kind of famous spirochete in medicine is syphilis. So my question to you is, why is Lyme disease, Borrelia burgdorferi, so different than treponema pallidum syphilis when they're both spirochetes? And from what we know overall, treating syphilis with a shot or two of penicillin does the job.
Yeah. So it's a great question. And we actually didn't know the answer to that question. And probably about 10 or 11 years ago, when researchers from Johns Hopkins University, Stanford, University of New Haven, Dr. Eva Schappi's group, they discovered that Lyme, Borrelia burgdorferi, is a what's called a biofilm persister infection. And what that means is it's actually similar to bugs like tuberculosis and leprosy, which are
Okay.
kind of slow
Those are
growing,
tough ones, yeah.
intracellular, very difficult to eradicate. So the issue before that is we knew that the bacteria had a cell wall, so penicillins would work like with syphilis. We knew that it would go inside the cells. We could use antibiotics like azithromycin, goes inside the cells, or doxy, inside the cells. And we knew that it also had what were called L forms, S forms, cystic forms, cell wall deficient forms. In those forms at the time, and I'm talking like 20 years ago, we knew that drugs like Plaquenil, hydroxychloroquine, natural substances like grapefruit seed extract, and I discovered even Flagyl, metronidazole, hit those forms. So we knew there were three forms. There was a cell wall, intracellular, and there was a cystic or cell wall deficient form. But what happened is we would treat with these three forms, like I would give a cell wall drug like Omnicef, Plaquenil, Zithromax. People would get better, but the minute you stop the drugs, the symptoms would come back.
Okay, so let me ask you this. So first of all, so this is different than syphilis. Syphilis doesn't have these cystic L forms, all this
No,
stuff.
interestingly enough, it
It
does. And of
does.
course, it actually
Oh, okay.
does.
Okay.
But, you
And
know, and again, there are, of course, chronic forms of syphilis also with chronic
there
dementia.
are, right. It seemed that when we were taught that this was extremely rare, unless it wasn't, if somebody was treated.
Yes, and it's the same with Lyme. I mean, you can cure Lyme if you get it early
If you
in,
catch it early enough. Okay.
70, 75% of cases. I mean, the
Okay.
literature, you know, sometimes they say 10 to 20% of the patients get post-treatment Lyme disease syndrome. If you look at even the Hopkins data, it's probably closer to 33%, even more, up to 48% that have chronic symptoms. So doxycycline will work early on, so will some, you know, penicillins, but there's a group of patients that clearly go on to have chronic symptoms. And of course, this has been one of the debates in medicine going on for, at this point, it's 50 years. Alan Stier and Willie Bergdorfer discovered it 50 years ago.
Yeah,
So
wow.
this debate's been going on for a long time. But ever since the researchers discovered that these biofilm persister forms exist, we started looking into the medical literature. And I looked at, well, if it's a persister biofilm bacteria, kind of like leprosy, what are the drugs? So I looked at leprosy and I went, oh, of course, they use rifampin and dapsone for 1 year. So I looked at the qualities of the drug dapsone, and it was very interesting because the drug is used for persister bacteria. It has great penetration into the central nervous system. That would mean to me, oh, gee, maybe I don't need IV rocephin, right? Ceftriaxone in those neurological cases. It helps with autoimmune diseases. They use Bicets for different autoimmune-like diseases that are out there. And also it has anti-malarial effects. Might be helpful for babesia and anti-inflammatory effects. And every symptom you get in chronic Lyme is from inflammation. So I looked at the drug and I went, wow, it's got these five qualities. Looks like it's going to be a winner mixing it with rifampin. Let's try it. And I just added doxycycline to it. And the first study I published was back in 2016, almost 10 years ago. In 100 patients, we varied the dose from 25 to 100 milligrams of dapsone, and it was a home run. People immediately noticed getting help. And the difference was, we were using a different style of treatment using these biofilm persister drugs, dapsone, rifampin, pyrazinamide, methylene blue. They're not drugs that doctors would normally think of using for Lyme disease.
No, you're right. You came up with a creative solution.
And you know, and I went into medicine exactly the same time you did during that epidemic. And I remember, you know, those HIV patients coming in with TB or MAI,
Yes.
Mycobacterium avium
Very hard to
intracellularis.
treat. Yeah.
Right. So, you know, we had experience using INH, rifampin, pyrazinamide. We were using TB drugs. So I actually was looking for an excuse once I found out it was a biofilm persister bacteria to use these drugs. And once Hopkins published it and others published it, I went, okay, I'm jumping in and diving in. And it was a success. It took me 9 or 10 years, however, to find the right dosage, the right combination of antibiotics, how to protect against the side effects of dapsone, because dapsone also has side effects, anemia that can be is reversible. You'll see methemoglobinemia where you don't carry oxygen well in the blood. But we figured out over time how to reverse these side effects. And ultimately, for example, my wife was sick for 25 years. She's 7 years in full remission ever since she did dapsone combination therapy. So
Wow.
there's a lot of patients now in remission. But the key, and I will, you know, point this out, most of these people with chronic Lyme don't just have Lyme. They have the three Bs: Babesia, this malaria-like organism, and Bartonella, a form of cat scratch fever. Many of them, up to 90%, at least in my practice, have mold toxicity with heavy metals, and that causes inflammation and a whole set of other problems affecting the immune system. And then they also have microbiome issues. Many have mast cell activation. They're not falling asleep. They get inflammation from it. They have vitamin and mineral deficiencies. So I developed a model over the last 41 years I call MSIDS, Multiple Systemic Infectious Disease Syndrome. And that's what I wrote about in both of my best-selling books. And what this model is, it's like going into a doctor's office with 16 nails in your foot and saying, "I have pain." And if the doctor only finds one nail, obviously it comes back in a month, you're going to tell him you have pain. You got to find all the nails. That's what the MSIDS map does, is say, okay, is it your hormones? Is it adrenal insufficiency? Do you have low testosterone? Do you have mast cell or leaky gut with food sensitivity? So it goes through piece by piece where the inflammation's coming from, and it's ended up being very, very useful, not just in Lyme, by the way, but in many chronic diseases.
Yeah, I mean, you sound, I mean, I like to think I follow in your path. I mean, it's really like being a medical detective. It's being super thorough, and it's unfortunately not what the conventional medical system is set up for, dealing with patients like, that we see, right? Because I see the same type of patients. I see Candida overgrowth, mast cell activation. I've worked with Dr. Neil Nathan a lot with toxic mold. These are very, and of course, he's very big on not only Borrelia, Bartonella, like you are. And it only makes sense too. I used to think like these ticks, it's not like they say, oh, I'm just going to carry the Lyme tick around. A lot of these ticks all travel together and they all have their own bunch of things that are going to bother us. Let's get into testing a little bit too, because I think this is where also so many doctors have missed the boat. There's just also so much confusion. I think you shed a lot of really interesting light on it, especially in your book, How Can I Get Better, which I really loved. Because it's really funny, as I was reading, I had all these questions I was going to ask you. They started to get answered as I read them. So let's ask this too, about the confusion and the controversy of diagnosing Lyme disease. So let's get into a little bit about, essentially there's like sort of two levels of testing. There's the ELISA testing, which is the antibodies, the immediate IgM and IgG. And then there's what's called Western blot, which checks for specific proteins to the Lyme bacteria. But here's where the issue comes in. I think for so many doctors, I see, I don't know, I must have seen a lot of probably not nearly as many as you, but probably over my 30-year career, like, I don't know, 50 to 100 patients that had Lyme testing. And most of the time it was negative, so it was like, I don't see anything here. Then the people would go, well, my doctor or whatever told me to go to Igenix, the special lab in California, and they told me they saw one thing positive. Now, none of this matched up with the CDC's recommendations. And I know you feel differently. So this is a great opportunity for our listeners to hear your expertise. I mean, I'm looking at it now too. I just downloaded it the other day too.
Hi, everyone. I know you may already know from listening to my podcast that I specialize in treating patients with toxic mold exposure. It's become a serious problem for many years as we deal with the hurricanes and floods throughout the country. Even simple bathroom water leaks from a toilet in your home over time can contribute to mold buildup. I can help patients that suffer from the symptoms of toxic mold, but I also rely on the patients getting their current residents inspected so they are not continually being exposed. My go-to person for mold exposure is Joe Reese. Joe is a certified mold inspector with decades of experience. He is super thorough and gives you a straightforward assessment and tells you whether it's safe to live in your home or if there is mold. I should know, I used Joe when I moved to my new home 4 years ago. Fortunately, when I moved in, I smelled an unusual odor in my basement and I immediately called Joe. He came over with his instruments and he found the problem. Afterwards, I had remediation and the problem was solved. Joe does inspections all throughout the country. He welcomes calls to his cell phone at 908-451-4592. You can also reach him by email at jprconsultants7929@gmail.com. Remember, mold in your home is not a good thing, but thankfully it's a problem that can be fixed.
But so the answer to your question is, with the CDC, if you actually look at their website, they talk about Lyme even being a clinical diagnosis. And the first thing everyone who's listening needs to understand is you don't make the diagnosis of Lyme disease based on blood testing. You make it based, believe it or not, on a clinical diagnosis. So the question, of course, is how do you make the clinical
Yeah, that's
diagnosis?
because that's tough, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So we validated a questionnaire years ago at the State University of New Paltz, 1,600 people. Many of them were Lyme sufferers, and also there was a normal group who were healthy. And we validated this questionnaire. You can find the questionnaire on my website, cangetbetter.com. Just go under, I think it's under symptoms, and you can download the PDF and take it and score it. So the way this works is if you score over 63 on this questionnaire, statistically, it means you're two standard deviations above the mean. You have a very high likelihood of having Lyme. But here's an easy way to understand the questionnaire. When people have chronic Lyme disease, they have certain characteristics that tells a clinician that it's likely it's there. They have good and bad days that come and go without really any good explanation. Women will tell you around their menstrual cycle, right before, during, or after, the symptoms get worse, because when the estrogen goes down, the bugs tend to come out. But the hallmark of Lyme is migratory pain. So if you have migratory joint pain, where one day it's in your shoulder, and 2 days later it's in your knees, and 3 days later it's in your ankles, and it almost sounds crazy, like it's moving all over, or migratory muscle pain, or migratory nerve pain. And the nerve pain, the way they describe it, is tingling, numbness, burning, stabbing sensation, sometimes a vibration sense. Now, migratory nerve pain, the only disease that causes this is chronic Lyme disease. There is no other disease in medicine that causes it. But the migratory aspect is very important because 90 to 95% of patients tell you that. So if they say, I have good and bad days where I'm tired, I'm achy, I have headaches, I have a very stiff neck, I can't think, I have memory concentration problems with brain fog, I walk into rooms and I can't remember why I'm walking in. Many of them have chest pain, palpitations. If they have babesia, questions 1 in 22 on the questionnaire is, I have day sweats, night sweats, chills, flushing, sometimes fevers, an unexplained cough or air hunger. I can't seem to catch my breath. Those symptoms are specific for babesia. Around 1% will not have it, but most actually do. So you listen to the story. Good and bad days, symptoms coming and going, women around the menstrual cycle, migratory pain, and then they take antibiotics. And the symptoms either get much worse, where people may think, oh, I have an allergic reaction, but it's called a Herxheimer reaction. You're killing off the bacteria, the symptoms get worse, or you had an upper respiratory infection, you had a urinary tract, you take antibiotics and you go, I feel tremendously better, what's going on? You lowered the load of the bacteria, right? The inflammation went down. But finally, after you listen to those symptoms and you discuss Digenics, the problem with the testing is if there's at least 18 different strains of Borrelia, not Borrelia sensu strictu, the original strain that was discovered 50 years ago. There's all these cousins of Lyme disease making people sick, both in the Southwest and otherwise, which are not picked up on the standard ELISA and Western blot. And even the CDC says that the two-tiered testing of an ELISA followed by a Western blot is for health departments to epidemiologically screen large populations of people. It's not meant for an individual diagnosis. Unfortunately, insurance companies have taken those in terms, and that's why I think doctors have gotten confused. But even the CDC says it is a clinical diagnosis. But here's the key. There's a game you can play using an Igenics immunoblot, which checks at least 8 different strains. I call it Lyme Bingo. And everyone who's listening, you should copy down these numbers. If you have any of these numbers, these bands on an immunoblot, you have Lyme disease. These are the bands. 23, outer surface protein C. 31, outer surface protein A. 34, outer surface protein B, 39, and or the 83/93 band.
Well, can I ask, and why do you say that? Because they're very specific.
These are proteins on the outside of the bacteria that are very specific for Lyme disease. In other words, the other bands, like the 41 band, you have spirochetes in your mouth called dentacola spirochetes. You'll get a 41 band in most people from dentacola. It doesn't mean you have Lyme.
Okay.
But what you were describing with the IgM, CDC IgM blot, where you need two out of, you know, those three bands, 2341, right, is one of those ones. The 41 band is actually considered positive for an early IgM. But here's the kicker. The IgM positive Western blots or immunoblots are actually seen more frequently in chronic Lyme. Most patients do not have 5 bands on a Western blot or an immunoblot. And by the way, the FDA just approved the Igenics blots. So Igenics now has an FDA-approved Lyme test. For all the doctors out there saying, gee, I've heard, you know, it's not a great lab, they now have FDA approval, right, for doing these tests. So it's really we've made a lot of progress in the last couple of years.
Let me ask you those, because I've seen my share of Igenics results too. And also you'll see is obviously a little minus sign, a little plus sign, and an indeterminate.
Yes.
Yeah, I know. I don't know. In medicine, I don't like, it's like, I hate saying, my original background is in allergy, and doctors used to write down a little plus sign next to a skin test or double plus sign. So usually double, triple plus meant a little bit more. So even if it's a gentle little plus sign, that's a positive to you. And how do you feel about indeterminate? Is that
It actually is for me, and I'll tell you why. So the sickest patients usually have immune deficiency. So in a study that I published going back about, I think it was in 2019 in the International Journal of Medicine and also in healthcare, we published that 20% of the patients we saw, these were 200 patients with chronic Lyme, 20% had chronic variable immune deficiency. They were not making IgG antibodies, and they had sub 85% had subclass deficiencies. So these patients that are chronically ill, what happens is when the Lyme spirochete enters your lymph nodes, it gets rid of the IgG antibodies and it leaves the IgM. So what happens is many of these chronic Lyme patients are CDC positive IgM blots or CDC positive IgM immunoblots. The doctors look at it and go, well, hold on, IgM's early Lyme, it must be false positive. But what they're not understanding is it's both early Lyme and late Lyme because Borrelia got rid of some of these places in the lymph nodes where they make IgG antibodies. And there's also researchers in the animal models that have also shown the same thing. So if you're immune suppressed, you're not going to make antibodies. You can't even rely. And that's, by the way, where some doctors use PCR, direct testing for DNA, or FISH, fluorescein in situ hybridization, which is one of my favorite tests. Like Igenex does a Babesia FISH and a Bartonella FISH, where they can visualize the malarial organism under the microscope fluoresce green or see Bartonella, many of these patients who are immunosuppressed, the FISH will be positive. So when I do testing for Lyme, Babesia, Bart, I do a Lyme immunoblot, a Babesia immunoblot, a Bartonella immunoblot, and a Babesia FISH, Bartonella FISH. That is an excellent start. And you can still use Quest and LabCorp, by the way, for Ehrlichia, Anaplasma, tularemia,
for
Rocky
the
Mountain Spotted
antibiotic, for
Fever.
the ELISA though, right? I mean, is that what
Well, you can get an ELISA through Quest LabCorp BioReference. And by the way, it's sometimes positive, but if you have a negative ELISA, that doesn't mean you don't have Lyme. There's
right.
also a type of ELISA called the C6 ELISA, which is specific. It will check several European strains, Borrelia abzelii, Borrelia garinii, and Borrelia sensu stricto. So if an ELISA is negative, you can do a C6 ELISA from the local labs, but even those can be negative. And then sometimes you'll do an immunofluorescent assay, an IFA, and you'll find that's positive, or none of them will be positive, and you'll just get an immunoblot with bands, the way we were discussing. The point is, you have to look at the symptom complex, ruling
Yeah.
out the diseases, and seeing if these Borrelia-specific bands are present. And the problem with the Western blots is a 31 band can be caused by autoimmunity or Epstein-Barr. It's not specific, but immunoblots are recombinant DNA. It's highly specific.
Let me ask one other thing too, because I had a discussion with this with Dr. Nathan once also. And also certain things too, we can get into treatment, but will the bands necessarily convert to negative, or can they stay positive forever? This makes it very tricky with treatment, that you're treating somebody, maybe they're getting better, they repeat the test, and it's still a positive band. Is that something you've seen as well?
The station that makes you feel good.
What if your worst dreams aren't your enemy?
Falling, cheating, being chased, naked, drowning, losing teeth. What if I fail? What if something goes wrong?
I'm Teresa Chung, dream expert, best-selling author, and co-host of The Healing Power of Your Dreams. And in my latest title, Extreme Dreaming, I reveal a powerful truth. There are no bad dreams.
They feel so real, but that's so you remember them.
They're messages, signals, transformative gifts guiding you toward clarity.
Click on the Extreme Dreaming discount banner link on UK Health Radio homepage and learn to decode even your darkest dreams.
Extreme Dreaming.
Are you ready to listen?
The station that makes you feel good.
So So normally after, and we'll discuss treatment, but after we do dapsone combination therapy, in fact, I'm about to discuss this. I have a medical detective Substack coming out this Wednesday because I'm finishing up my 41-year clinical career now doing consulting. One of
Congratulations.
the women, this is the perfect case. She had a positive immunoblot. She took dapsone combination therapy, went in remission for several years. All the bands on her immunoblot went away. But in patients who have not done these biofilm persister drug regimens, you will see these bands persist for years. And I'm writing up a journal article now for the Journal of Alzheimer's Disease Case Studies in a patient who had Lyme for, I don't know if it was 15 or 20 years. She decided she didn't want treatment. She had joint pain and rheumatoid factors were positive. And I said to her, recently we've been finding Alzheimer's markers positive in our Lyme patients. Would you like me to check? And she said, okay, but don't tell me. Just tell me if I have to do dapsone. I said, okay. So she came back and her p-tau was high. I forget it was p-tau 181 or p-tau 217. I said, listen, you have joint pain, your rheumatoid factors are positive, you don't have rheumatoid arthritis, and now I'm showing inflammation in your brain. I need you to do dapsone. She did the 9-week protocol. 3 months later, the Alzheimer's markers reversed. They went below range. She was normal. The beta
Wow.
amyloid ratios improved and the rheumatoid factor turned negative. And she says to me, I thought it was my meditation that was making my brain clearer. I realize now it was your dapsone protocol. But I mean, that is tricky because she was 60 years old, thought her brain was working well from meditation, only had joint pain. 3 months after dapsone, she went, oh, I guess I did. So the answer is the bands do persist in people that have chronic Lyme, and I've seen them go away after dapsone combination therapy. So yes, it's a great question. And in fact, you'll see the bands change over time in people that have not done these persister drug regimens.
So are you usually hoping though that the bands will reverse, or that's not necessarily your end point? Because if they get better.
So my end point is from a clinical perspective, is I want all your symptoms gone. So when they fill
Right.
out my HMQ, this Horowitz-Evanson questionnaire that we talked about, cangetbetter.com, look under
Right.
symptom questionnaire. If they said to you, I have moderate fatigue, severe joint pain that migrates, moderate neuropathy that's moving around my body, brain fog, I can't sleep, et cetera, et cetera. And after they do the treatment, let's say for Lyme and Bartonella, with the 9-week dapsone protocol, 4 2-week antibiotic pulses for Bart, what I want to see is they fill out the questionnaire a year later and they go, I have no more fatigue, my joint pain's gone, my neuropathy's gone, my brain is clear. I want to see those symptoms unless there's some other MCIDS factor like the mold needs to be gone or something else needs to be treated. So clinically, I want to see your symptoms gone. And I don't rely on the immunoblots, but then I want to see the immunoblots turn negative, could be 6 months, a year, 2 years later. And that is the case for many of the patients who've done these drug regimens.
Oh, that's good to know. Yeah, I mean, that's always like in medicine, like sometimes a clean ending. I want to ask you something else too, because I was really, this was one of the things I was dying to ask you. And then I'm reading your book, and it's kind of like you answered it, but I want to hear it from you. And what does that do? That irritation inside the cell causes the cell to release cytokines. In chronic Lyme, it's like because of this irritation, the cells just keep on releasing, maybe the gamma interferon and some of these other cytokines that are causing symptoms. Like you said, the
You're
migratory
talking
joint
chronic
pain.
Lyme or long COVID now?
No, I'm talking long COVID
Long
first.
COVID, yeah.
Long COVID. So it's causing, the joint pain, the brain fog, a whole bunch that's going on and on and on. I mean, giving more medication, to stop the COVID is not going to do anything. You have to deal with the inflammation. So what I thought for a long time until I really read your book, and I thought the same kind of thing with chronic Lyme. I thought that, these patients aren't really chronically infected with a spirochete. It's that somehow the DNA from the bacterium is in, whatever is inside the cell, it's just irritating the cell and making it release all these different cytokines, which are giving horrible symptoms. So my question to you, so I know you mentioned the book, but I forgot where exactly, but you say no, that's not the case. Is that, am I correct?
If you've been following the podcast, you may know I practice holistic functional medicine and immunology. In fact, at Mitchell Medical Group, we've been treating chronic fatigue patients for 3 decades. It's critical in this work to have a trusted pharmacy that can compound medications for our sensitive patients' needs. ITC Pharmacy has been our go-to pharmacy the entire time. They can make medications ranging from thyroid hormones to dye-free medications for all of our highly sensitive, even allergic patients. If you or your holistic doctor are looking For these very specific patient medications, you can contact ITC at 888-349-5453. They have licenses throughout the country and can have medications delivered right to your doorsteps. My patients have been so pleased with their service, and you will be too.
Well, so there's two theories, and I'll talk about long COVID also. So first of all, we published an article last year on three cases of chronic Lyme disease, all in long-term remission at this point. And this was in one of the journals where we also discussed, by the way, long COVID. It turned out one of these patients that's in remission had COVID seven times. She's still in remission from all of it. But so we did a research and we found out that the 16-point model that I developed for chronic Lyme applied to long COVID. We found out that all 16 factors are found also in long COVID. Now, what's interesting is I tried Bruce Prattison's protocol using CCL5 RANTes inhibitors and, you know, using pravastatin. It didn't do anything. It didn't help at all my patients. Even Bruce has been publishing, but we didn't see it.
Yeah.
After now reviewing it, what I think has happened in some of these patients, I do think in some patients, the spike proteins, whether you got the natural virus or it's from a vaccine, could be one or the other or both. I do think in some people, it does stay there and it does stimulate an inflammatory reaction. But what's interesting about it is because all 16 factors are with long COVID, a lot of these patients with long COVID have chronic Lyme. They have Bartonella, they have Babesia, they have mold. In other words, it's almost like, I think when people are calling it long COVID, they may not realize that all of these factors that we see in chronic Lyme are actually overlapping. The only difference being, you're going to get a lot of Epstein-Barr reactivation and HHV-Sick reactivation in long COVID, which we do see. And we do see it also in some of our chronic Lyme patients who've gotten long COVID, right, where they got sick afterwards. In Lyme, the difference is there's this thing called peptidoglycans. So it is not impossible that a piece of the cell wall of the Borrelia burgdorferi gets stuck in some of the cells. Alan Steer's group and others have published on this. I don't believe it's an either-or phenomenon, but in general, my experience is these bacteria are alive and well and hiding in biofilms inside the cells, but it's not like you can't have some inflammation from peptidoglycans, pieces of the bacteria. All so doctors somehow they've gotten into this black or white thinking that it's got to be this or that, but truthfully, it can be all of the above.
Yeah,
and I think that's where sometimes we get thrown off track.
That's a good point. Yeah, because, you know, bringing up the whole thing about the COVID vaccine, because again, obviously you're getting the spike protein, but you're not getting an active infection. But there have been, unfortunately, some horrific, you know, complications from that.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
What if your healing journey could feel empowering, hopeful, even transformative? Welcome to the Alkaline Collective Mastermind, a community for anyone facing cancer, staying cancer-free, or committed to prevention. No matter your stage, whether you've chosen conventional care, an integrative path, or a fully holistic approach, here, you're not alone. Here, your healing journey becomes a journey of empowerment. We explore the science of oxygenation, metabolism, and alkalinity, while strengthening your emotional, spiritual, and physical well-being. This is a mastermind with heart, accountability, connection, wisdom and real support. Because your journey isn't just about surviving. It's about thriving. Join us by clicking on the Alkaline Collective Mastermind banner on the UK Health Radio homepage or directly at alkaline-collective.com, where self-belief grows, healing deepens, and transformation begins.
Somewhere on Earth, there are 4 acres that belong to you. You don't need to be there in person. Only there in purpose, protecting it, defending it, keeping it alive. Because the world doesn't need more good intentions. It needs more meaningful actions. Register your interest at 4acresearth.com.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
I mean, I was a big fan of doing the initial vaccinations. Now I'm not such a big fan of doing boosters after talking to Dr. Paul Offit from Penn. I mean, I think he makes a lot of really good points, and he's on the vaccine committee. With that all in mind, what would you say, sort of, I guess, generically a little bit, would be, well, let's say, What would be your acute? Let's say somebody got bit by a tick. I know if I got bit by a tick and I saw it, trust me, I'm getting that tick and I'm sending you off to the lab up in upstate New York and having them analyze it. But let's say it was positive for one of the Borrelia, if it caught that or whatever, too. What would be your acute treatment? And then if you could talk after, if somebody said, oh, I think I got bit a year ago, I don't know, I've been feeling horrible, my back pain is that too, and they're a chronic Lyme. So maybe if you can sort of give us some general pointers.
I'd like to take a moment to let my listeners know that my new book, Conquering Candida, is now available on Amazon in paperback and ebook. If you believe you suffer from Candida, this is the first book in 50 years since the original book, The Yeast Connection by Dr. William Crook, to give credence to this underdiagnosed and undertreated condition. If you also want to understand gut health and the microbiome, I also believe you will enjoy this book. I do appreciate if you read this book to rate it on Amazon and provide your comments and a review.
So the issue with Ixodes scapularis, the deer tick right now, is that tick can transmit not just Lyme disease, but also hard tick, relapsing fever, Borrelia miyamotoi. And by the way, so when you're asking about, the Lyme tests, Borrelia miyamotoi is like a cousin of Lyme disease, and it does not test positive by ELISAs or Western blots. And it kind of looks like Lyme and smells like Lyme, but especially in the immunosuppressed patients, it makes them sick. So keep in mind, one tick bite, you get Lyme, you get this hard tick relapsing fever. You can also, at that point, get anaplasmosis, right? You can get babesiosis, and you can get also the Powassan virus, right? Which comes in within 15 minutes of a tick bite, right? So interestingly enough, in the Northeast and also Midwest, 10 to 16% of the people test positive for Powassan antibodies, which means that a lot of us have actually been exposed to this, but fortunately, we've not gotten neuroinvasive Powassan and, gotten sick from it. So when you send out the tick, if you get back, yes, Borrelia is there, Borrelia miyamotoi is there, Anaplasma is there, Babesia is there. You also have to look for the symptoms. Now, you'll see on a lot of the sites, they say the tick has to be on for at least 24 to 36 hours, 48 hours, or it can transmit. So here's the problem. If a tick feeds off of another animal and the spirochetes move from the midgut into the salivary glands, next time it bites you, it's right there in the salivary glands to be injected. And that's why patients have reported being sick within hours
Wow,
sometimes of
that's a
getting a
good
tick bite
point.
because
Good point.
it fed off of another animal and already moved in there. So I think you need to understand that Powassan gets in 15 minutes. Rickettsia rickettsii, Rocky Mountain spotted fever, which could happen from the Lone Star tick, Emboloma americanum, gets in within 10 minutes. And Borrelia hermsii, relapsing fever, gets in within 5 minutes. So the reason I tell my patients, hey, with the climate warming, right, insects reproduction rates are going up, you need to be keeping your, picaridin 20% spray the minute you go out and spray it all over your skin, or lemon eucalyptus oil, DEET if it's deep woods, and use permethrin-treated clothing because we are in an epidemic of ticks. I got my first bite, by the way, this year after 25 years, and I had to actually take a short course of doxy. I never got sick. I have not had a tick on me. We have our property sprayed with New York Tick Control, and I'm an environmentalist. I don't use chemicals. This company, New York Tick Control, comes and sprays twice a year with Ultra Tempo. It does not get in the groundwater. We do it in the spring, in the fall, and I have 50 bait boxes for the mice around my property so I stay safe. This was in a state park where we were taking my dog for a walk. Now, it's different with getting a tick bite and no symptoms. If you get a tick bite, the EM rash can come out from 3 to 30 days where you get the typical bullseye, which, by the way, half the time doesn't look like a bullseye. It looks like a spreading red rash that looks like a cellulitis. You'll go into the ER and they go, oh, that's a bacterial infection. It's a spider bite. It's herpes zoster. You'll hear everything under the sun from ER docs who don't know the manifestations. In that case, it's different. If you're 30 days after a tick bite, you've still got a shot with 28 days of doxycycline to cure it. You do. You have a chance of it. But in some patients, we believe that the biofilm forms may form early. So if you get a tick bite and you get a rash with no symptoms, you're probably going to be cured with doxy. But if you get a tick bite with a rash and you say, I have a stiff neck, I have light sensitivity, sound sensitivity,
You're already into
dizziness,
deeper stage.
yeah, memory issues, I have tingling, numbness, burning of my extremities or face. It's already gotten up into your central nervous system. It's gotten into your peripheral nervous system. You are not going to cure that with 30 days of doxy.
So
In
what
that
would you
case,
do? Do they need that IV like ceftriaxone or something?
I don't ever have to use ceftriaxone anymore. The only time I will ever, because doxy has great penetration into the brain. The only time in the last 5 years I've ever had to use it is a patient who came in with Bell's palsy, who got Borrelia mayoni, another Borrelia species in the Midwest, and came to New York. He had a Bell's palsy that was not responding to doxy. I gave him 28 days of IV Rocephin. That is the last time I've ever had to use it. Dapsone basically gets into the central nervous system and makes things better. So I really don't have to use it.
So is
But
that what you like to use with? So again, so how? What's your deal difference? Just general. I mean, I know this is more sophisticated there, but what is your general approach to a chronic Lyme patient?
so if you have failed even a month of regular antibiotics, you've done doxy, you've done amoxicillin, you've done ceftin, you've done Omnicef, you've done Omnicef and Cithromycin. You did a standard course of antibiotics and you're still sick. And you've been sick for more than a month or two. You are a chronic Lyme slash post-treatment Lyme disease patient. You need a biofilm persister drug regimen. There's only two that are available: dapsone combination therapy and disulfiram, antabuse, the drug we learned in medical school to use for alcoholics.
Oh, wow.
So that was discovered by Stanford University. Dr. Kenneth Ligner published a couple of studies on it, and it is useful. But the problem is the drug is very difficult to use. Columbia University just
I'm
did
sorry, which one's the other two? Dapsone's hard to
disulfiram, disulfiram.
use? Disulfiram. Okay.
Because it has a 14-day half-life, it can cause neuropathy. It causes psychiatric symptoms to come out. I mean, it's not an easy drug to use. You have to start very low and go slow. But there are some people who do respond. My experience is dapsone is much easier, but you have to get used to using it because of the four side effects, which I call do no harm. H is for Herxheimer reactions. The protocol, the way I designed it, is we block inflammation. We use glutathione, N-acetylcysteine, alpha-lipoic acid. And you can read, by the way, if you go on my website under consulting, you can see all of the articles we published on dapsone, including two documentaries of 27 patients that got their lives back, two doctors who are using dapsone who, are raving about it. You can look at all of this on my website, Can Get Better, under the consulting. But here's really what it comes down to. You have to have a good hemoglobin to do dapsone, and you have to have an enzyme called G6PD. If you don't have glucose 6-phosphate dehydrogenase, you're going to get hemolysis. You're going to get more anemic.
Yeah.
Now, if you're a guy who's 28 years old with a hemoglobin of 16, you can pretty much just close your eyes and do the protocol, and they're going to be fine.
So is
But
it
if you're
Dapsone
dealing with a
alone though?
woman who's got a hemoglobin of 12 with heavy menstrual cycles, she's not likely going
That's
to
a
get
great
through the whole
point.
dapsone.
But the Dapsone in a chronic case, you use that alone or you still use
No,
some other?
so dapsone combination therapy is using a tetracycline like Minoxidil or doxy with rifampin and dapsone month one. Month two, we add Zithromax and we start using methylene blue. If Bartonella is present, we also may use pyrazinamide. So the regimen, and again, you can read it. It's all been published in the medical literature. Your doctor, by the way, doesn't need me for consult. They can read it and use the protocol. I've given them the cookbook and I have a medical detective Substack that explains it under Bartonella. The whole protocol cookbook is explained so doctors can use it. But the point being, no, it's many herbs. We're using four biofilm agents: stevia, cinnamon clove oregano oil, biocidin, peppermint oil to open up those biofilms so that the drugs can get in where the bugs are hiding. We give them four different probiotics. We have not seen a case of C. diff diarrhea in decades, basically doing the protocol this way. And we've designed it with protocols where you lower inflammation and help people with Herxheimer
How
reactions.
long is it usually? 3 months, 6 months? How
It's
long is
9 weeks.
nine weeks?
It's not, if you can get through it from start to finish, 9 or 10 weeks. But, and that's assuming you have a good hemoglobin, 14 or higher. If you're a woman and you're starting at 12, you may get through 6 or 7 weeks of the protocol, have to stop it, take a month or two off, let the counts come back up from the anemia from dapsone, and it always comes back to normal. And then finish up the protocol. And the nice part is you don't lose anything because once you've lowered these biofilm persisters, it's permanent. Like they don't grow back from these biofilms. I know this because I've watched patients.
We can also are the. I mean, I can understand pretty well biofilms like in our teeth, our gums and everything. You can see that. When you're saying with these biofilms, I'm just curious. Is that something really we were taught in medical school? Where are these? Is this between the cells on the
So from
surfaces of
what we've
cells?
seen, believe it or not, they're finding them in the bloodstream, they're finding it in tissues, they're finding them all over.
And what are the biofilms? Are they? Because I know, like with Dr. Nathan, we talk about. with mold, mold being able to, I talked to actually, it's interesting, mold inspectors who they're like incredibly knowledgeable about how these biofilms form with the molds,
That's pretty much. So what they do is the bacteria come together in a community and they start
Regular
forming.
bacteria, like they're normally a part of our microbiome.
Yeah, so in other words, in fact, most bacteria, by the way, form biofilms. So for example, we learned in medical school endocarditis, right? Biofilm infection. Candida in your gut, biofilm infection. Salmonella in your gut, biofilm infection. You just mentioned it. Porphyromonas gingivalis from the teeth, if you don't get cleaned, biofilm infection that's now being found in Alzheimer's, right? As one of the potential bacteria causing it. So biofilms have been around for ages, and what they do is they protect the bacteria. And what it is it's like DNA and proteins, and they're called peptidoglycans. They come together, these sugar molecules, and they protect the bacteria. So your immune system's looking for the bacteria, and it can't find it because it's underneath. And also, the biofilms have pores where it's allowing like molecules and nutrition to go through. They basically form a community where they work together, and they have what's called quorum sensing. They know when antibiotics are on board, they go dormant. The minute you stop the antibiotics, if it's not the biofilm persister like Dapsone combination therapy, once the antibiotics are on board, they start growing again. So these biofilms have been around for ages. Most bacteria cause them. It's not just like Lyme is the
Do they
only
have
one
any
that does it.
beneficial? Do they have any benefit to our bodies? I'm just curious, because usually when the body does something,
Oh
no.
God, no. So
It's
they've,
more
for
of a
example,
defense
if
thing.
so if you get a hip replacement and you get infections in your body, that hip replacement will form biofilms. If a woman gets, she gets a breast enlargement and they put in a saline capsule, they will find biofilms and sometimes even mold on the external of the capsule. Biofilms will form in the body, but they're finding them in the blood, in the tissues. They're even finding them in the brain. So Eva Schappi published a study several years ago that in the Alzheimer's population, this is autopsy studies, they found with spirochetes like Lyme, they found biofilm, amyloid and p-tau in the brains of Alzheimer's. So these biofilms are even making it up to the brain, protecting them. And by the way, beta amyloid is an antimicrobial peptide. You don't just form beta amyloid in your brain for nothing. You're doing it because it's actually trying to protect from the bacteria and the infections.
That makes sense. That makes a lot of sense. As we're winding down, I know also too, I mean, you have so many tools in your toolbox. I'm just interested because you mentioned that. I don't want to really derail so much in really important things you've said, but one of the things you mentioned in the book, and it's funny, I've actually interviewed him many years ago, if it's the same one, Dr. Zhang, because you mentioned about the Zhang protocol. He uses all these Chinese herbs and everything, mainly a lot of allicin. And he mentioned about the Rife machine, some kind of device. I don't know if you're familiar with it. So, do these other things have any legitimacy or in conjunction?
So they do have. So here's the problem. So Dr. Zhang's herbs, Rife machines, all of these things. But so the problem is that it's not that there's no effect, but what we don't know that Rife machines and Chinese herbs affect the biofilm forms of the bacteria. So do Chinese herbs like Dr. Zhang's traditional Chinese medicine help? Absolutely. I've used in thousands of patients Coptis, HH, Circulation P, Allicin. I've used these herbs, Cordyceps, Perarnt. They work. They help. Are they curative? I don't believe so.
Yeah, that's
They're, it's
right.
kind of like with the antibiotics, they're knocking down the infection.
Then your immune
Once you
system has to go
understand
in
this,
there.
yeah, once you understand this is a biofilm persister infection, you need to use biofilm persister drugs, and that's Dapsone combination therapy.
Do you like that Interphase Plus? I know Dr. Nathan likes that a lot. Are you a fan of that?
I use other ones instead.
Okay. This was amazing. I love talking to you. You really, God, you're such a fund of knowledge. Anything else we should mention before we finish up?
Really, just to let people know that Lyme is the great imitator. If you've been diagnosed with chronic fatigue syndrome or fibromyalgia or some non-specific autoimmune disease, including, by the way, MS, there's a lot of MS patients I've seen, it is not true MS, or even dementia, where they're telling you it's Alzheimer's, but your genetics don't fit. I'm just letting you know Lyme is the great imitator. And we have found that the 16-point model that I discuss in both of my books, Why Can I Get Better? How Can I Get Better? So this new book coming out from Simon & Schuster in 2026 called Ending Chronic Illness, what we discovered is the 16-point model that we talked about for long COVID and Lyme. It applies to Alzheimer's, autism, ADHD, allergies and asthma, cancer, cardiovascular. We discovered that almost every major disease on the planet. So this is going to be literally, everyone's looking for a paradigm shift of how do we do medicine differently to really get people better. Well, you can't just name a disease and throw drugs at it. You got to find out where the inflammation's coming from. That's how you
Right.
started. It is about inflammation. So stay tuned because it's an exciting book that'll be coming out. And I want to tell people you should have hope. Never, ever, ever give up. If you have a disease that's not getting better, please find a doctor who's willing to be a medical detective. It's called actually Medical Detective Substack, where I do once a week, you know, newsletters for people, and it's free to sign up. You need to know there is hope. Do not give up, because as I said, my wife's 7 years in remission. I have patients who've been sick for 30, 40 years in remission. There are answers. And we just applied for an NIH randomized multicenter placebo trial to prove, in fact, I sent it to Secretary Kennedy today, to look at the R34 NIH grant so I can prove to the world we have answers. So have hope, but know it is a great imitator. And if you're still sick and you're on lots of drugs and supplements and maybe even feel better, but not as well as you think you can be, please look at the 16-point model and read the book next year, Ending Chronic Illness. I think you're going to get a lot out of it, because I don't think medicine's, I think you would agree at this point, naming the disease and throwing drugs at it is not the answer for the chronic disease epidemics we're seeing, where 1 in 2 Americans has a chronic disease and 1 in 4 has 2 chronic diseases. We have to do better. And I think this kind of paradigm shift I'm talking about, we're not only going to help Lyme, we're going to help a lot of people. So it's exciting. It's kind of the new stage of my career. I'm really looking forward to it.
Dr. Richard Horowitz, again, thank you so much. A pleasure speaking to you. I think this is tremendous for all our listeners, and hope to have you on again soon.
Thank you, Dean. I really appreciate it. It was great talking to you today.
Me too. All right, we'll be in touch. I think we have something else coming up next week.
We do, actually.
Thanks for joining me here on UK Health Radio. I'm Dr. Dean Mitchell. If today's conversation was useful to you, please share it with someone who could benefit. You can find every episode of The Smartest Doctor in the Room wherever you listen to podcasts. Until next time, stay well.